Aaron. Where in the hell do you go when there's no place left to go? I mean, you are flat out rejected. The dream of your life as good as down the drain. The one thing gone you had your heart set on since you were a kid, standing in the middle of the blood-stained gutter. The horse crumpled up and dying. The wagon driver lying nearby like a broken pretzel. The car smashed. The whole neighborhood stumbling down the front stoops of their stucco houses to gape at the awful scene. Women fainting, men swearing, and some nut hollering, "Kill a horse! Kill a horse!" Half a dozen people had called the police, the ambulance, the fire truck. The doctor had raced out of his house. Paula Kaplowski, having her big chance as a cub reporter on the Brooklyn Eagle, made notes on back of an envelope that she later could hardly read, spelling Dr. Menicky's name as Dr. Maniac. When she called it in later, she featured the kid who stood at the doctor's elbow the entire time the doc was stanching the flow and relieved him of the soap bandages. The paper ran it as a separate small item under the caption, "Medic displaces dogs," because according to the reporter, the kid, 10-year-old Aaron Goldfarb, had said, "Doctors are a man's best friend." Aaron's parents attributed their son's intense obsession for becoming a doctor to his presence at that accident, but Aaron assured them that he wanted to be a subway conductor so he could keep the door shut and allow his mother a comfortable ride. But they knew their Boy Scout and were not surprised when he achieved his first aid merit badge with special commendation. Indeed, he loved to pore over Dr. Menicky's books, then at 14, helped save a boy's life on a camping trip by applying a tourniquet. That's when they began to call him Doc, and the nickname stuck. His room was a mess of gadgets, pinups stuck on the wall, a blow-up of a photo of Jack Dempsey in the ring, clothing dumped on the floor, and he never remembered to make his bed. He would also forget to change his socks. As though his room wasn't overstuffed already, for his 16th birthday, his father complied with his request and bought him a replica of the human skeleton, with the provision that he would change his habits. He tried, but failed, and hung his underwear on the skeleton. Through high school, he showed a natural proclivity for anything related to science, spent hours in the chemistry lab creating his own experiments, and would have achieved an A in the course, as he did in all the rest, except that he blew up the lab table. In the annual state essay contest, he won third prize for his composition defending Darwin's theory of evolution, as outlined in the Scopes so-called monkey trial of a few years before, concluding his paper with the words, "Whatever a scientist does, he cannot afford to monkey around with the truth." As valedictorian, he chose to speak on the subject, "My country tis of thee." His grandparents had arrived from a Polish village with what they had on their backs, and where they couldn't even read, "I go to the best schools in the world." "That's great. And," he concluded, "any teacher in this school can come for treatment to my office for free." The assembly laughed, applauded, whistled, and yelled, "Hey, Doc!" Then he added, "But not until I get my degree. That's 8 more years. But that's okay, teachers. I'll probably be doing geriatrics." He had no problem with where he wanted to go to college, choosing to be away from home, picking one of the best of the nation's top-ranked institutions. He wanted to experience a new place, meet people other than the usual crowd of cynical New Yorkers. He selected a university in Virginia, not so far from home and from where he could get to see his parents. In addition, his best friend and tennis partner, Alan, had squeaked by to gain admission there as well, although his grades were on the edge. They planned to room together.
"Hey, Doc, we're in,"
Alan cried when they received news of their acceptances.
"You, me, and Hitler."
"Hitler? What the hell are you talking about?"
"Well, his party got the second most votes for the German parliament. It was on the radio."
"Oh, yeah? He's nothing but an anti-Semitic jerk, that schmuck. But what are we talking about? Are we going to apply for the room at the dorms together? We better do it today before they fill up."
Yeah, okay,"
Alan agreed. They went upstairs to Aaron's room to make out the forms and mail them off. Aaron found it hard leaving the city and its theaters and symphonies, which he attended with itinerant girlfriends, doling out his allowance for tickets, borrowing his father's car afterward for some heavy necking in the back seat. He never came closer than that. He wouldn't take the chance of getting anyone pregnant. He had his eye on the prize. By the end of his second year at college, he had already chosen the two greatest medical schools in the country to which he would apply, had spoken to his professors about it, was assured he had selected the very finest. He shared all his plans with Amy, with whom he had fallen in love, having met her at the hospital where he had taken a summer job as part of his hands-on education. She was a nurse's aide in training for her RN, a girl with a soft, round figure and tawny skin, and a delectable sense of humor. "My desert flower," he called her. She plowed her fingers through the thick ringlets of his black hair. It became increasingly difficult for him to keep his distance enough to fulfill his pledge, and there were nights when she was willing to help him break it. "We have time. We have time," he told her, fighting his own need. His studies, luckily, used up his hours and his energy. His courses were concentrated in the pre-medical area, and he graduated with honors, attaining one of the top scores in the entire country, and again had been chosen to deliver the graduation address. The night after, back home, he took the car, called for Amy, and they sped up to Connecticut to their seafood haven, the Plage. And as they strolled the beach afterwards, flecks of diamonds in the sky, a scythe of yellow behind thin, drifting clouds, Amy asked, "And what are your plans, Doc?" He looked surprised.
"Don't you know?
Tell me."
"I'm going to one or the other of my choices of med school. They're two best in the USA. I expect the OKs on admission any day."
"And then?"
"Then I'll have to choose my specialty. Both schools are doing terrific work in brain surgery, cancer research, psychiatry."
"Wow.
If I'm going to become the kind of doctor I've always wanted to be, there's no other way. What I'm planning to do is go up there as soon as possible, much before the term begins. I'm going to find a place where you can come for a visit any time."
"I don't want to be just a visitor, Aaron."
"It's going to be one hell of a demand. I mean, you know what they put you through in med school."
"And us?"
Us is just going to have to wait, honey. There's no one else but you, you know that. On the way home, neither of them said a word. His friend, Alan, whose grades did not match Aaron's, having applied to a number of lesser medical schools, telephoned him nervously every day to find out if he had received an acceptance yet.
I sent out 10 of them, Alan told him. So far, I got one yes and one no from some second-rate joints out west.
I'm still waiting, Aaron said.
Yours will come with offers for scholarships, Doc. Holy mackerel, I wish I was in your shoes with your record. Well, I can always go into my old man's business, or the army. Hitler became the Fury of Germany or something yesterday.
You know who's going to stop Hitler?
The Russians.
They're no better than he is. I'll tell you who. The Germans. You think a country that produced Beethoven and Goethe and Einstein is going to let this insane weasel take over? 10 days later, Aaron had begun to grow alarmed at not having received any communications, a feeling unlike any he had ever experienced. When on returning from picking up his repaired shoes, he and the mailman arrived at the door at the same moment.
Hey, Doc! Something for you here!
He handed him a number of envelopes. Thanks, Mr. Amber, he said, smiling, grabbing them. He leaped into the house and threw all but one of the letters on the foyer table, then ran to his room as his mother came in, just in time to see him disappear up the stairs, an envelope in his hand.
Aaron? She called.
She waited a moment and looked at them again and looked at the stairway again.
Aaron?
She called. She dropped the letters as she ran up. A few hours later, after his father came home, the three of them sat around the dinner table, Aaron's plate untouched, talking it over quietly.
The schools must have conferences among themselves, his father patiently suggested, dividing the best applicants so that just a few schools don't get the cream of the crop. You'll be admitted by your alternate choice. Since they were both first choices, it doesn't matter which one.
Aaron rose from the table.
They were my only choices, he said. There aren't any other choices for me. Excuse me. I'm going to take a walk.
The second envelope arrived in the morning. Another rejection. But with the explanation that their roster for that year had been filled. It took his father a week of intense search through devious channels he commanded in the business community, and by reaching out to highly placed friends before he could obtain the information he was seeking.
If he can wait another year, maybe I can do something for him.
One of the friends with inner circle connections told his father in a call that shook Mr. Goldfarb to his roots.
In the meanwhile, his friend confided, I know people at the University of Glasgow. Is Aaron interested? It's a prime medical school. Many of the top-ranked students who've been refused admission here because they're Jews are applying to Scotland. Let me know as soon as you can.